Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Maggie Perrin has been working as a screenwriter and director since the late 1990s, before winning the German Film Award in 2004 for her screenplay for Nabula, Elite für den Führer. She wrote the screenplays for Vanessa Jobs' Vergiss Amerika and for Dennis Gansel's Das Phantom, both of which won numerous awards. Maggie followed that with the script for Mädchen Mädchen. The film had an amazing audience of nearly 2 million in theaters. In 2007, she directed for the first time. Maggie's first feature, Stellungswechsel, was followed in 2010 by the refugee drama The Color of the Ocean, which premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival and won numerous awards. In 2013, Maggie wrote the screenplay for Nocebo, which was directed by Leonard Ruff and won the Student Oscar in 2014. In 2019, she wrote and directed the romantic comedy Hello Again. Maggie's most recent film, her fourth as a director, The Forger, Der Passfälscher, premiered as a special gala at the Berlinale 2022. We talked to Maggie via Zoom for this interview. Hi, Maggie. It's been a, well, good 2 years, probably a bit longer, since your film Hello Again, Ein Tag für immer, came out. So I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us and give us some insight about the creative process behind it. Romantic comedy or rom-com is having a bit of a renaissance in the past few years, thanks to Netflix and co, but also to some really great feature films. But for quite a while, the term was used as sort of a dirty word, sort of the movie equivalent to chick lit, you know, both a little bit derogatory, if we're honest. So given all of that, did you have any reservations at all regarding the genre?
No. I mean, the thing is, I love all genres, more or less. I'm a bit like a form shifter. And one of my favorite directors is Sydney Pollack. So, no, absolutely not. I mean, one of my most favorite movies are rom-coms, like The Apartment. Mm-hmm. I mean, The Apartment is really a rom-com. Roman Holiday is a rom-com.
Yes.
Notting Hill is a rom-com. I also think even Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a rom-com.
That might be controversial.
I think it's a rom-com with a very honest approach. I mean, because in the end, I mean, they try, you know? I think in a rom-com, I think the ending of rom-com is always the approach to give it a chance, which I like.
Yeah.
So if you take this Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, it's a rom-com, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Hello Again is a lovely mix between romance and comedy. And finding the balance can be tricky. Were you leaning maybe more towards one or the other? How hard was it to really balance the two for you?
But I mean, romance is a lot easier for me than comedy. You know, it was really difficult for me to write Mädchen Mädchen and Fleche Mädchen, which are really pure comedy genres. And I really admire, like, Bora Daktikin, who's like 100% comedy, because it's such hard work. Because if it's not funny, it's not funny. So for me, it's easier to make rom-coms, you know, more about the romantic aspect. For me, it was a lot easier to write and direct the second part. The first part is quite traditional. It's this Groundhog Day kind of genre. The day repeats, and it has to be funny. And then in the second half, there are all these questions. What is love? Can I fall for someone who's basically my very, very best friend? Am I capable of loving? All these questions, which I really like. So the second half of Hello Again, actually, I'm really proud of the second half. I like it.
Now a little bit more deeper into the script. How would you describe the film ideally in 3 words?
In 3 words?
Ideally.
In 3 words. I think in 1 sentence. Your lover has to be your best friend.
Okay. And you just mentioned Groundhog Day. And, you know, in the few interviews that I've read about the film, It's been described as a cross between Groundhog Day and My Best Friend's Wedding. So, of course, I'm wondering, do you fully agree with that assessment?
Well, it is a Groundhog Day film. When we had the idea, Steffi Ackermann and I, there were not so many Groundhog Day movies out.
Yeah.
Actually, it took a while to write the script, and I'm not the fastest writer. So while I was like writing it, there was like all these Groundhog films coming out. It was and then this big Netflix series. And it definitely is a Groundhog film, just because the day repeats again and again. And I really love Groundhog Day. It's one of my favorite movies. Yeah. I think it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm not sure if it is My Best Friend's Wedding, because mm-hmm. in My Best Friend's Wedding is she desperately wants to have her best friend just because someone else wants it. So it's really, in German, we say ex negativo, which means the approach comes from a negative aspect. So the character has to learn to let go. This is really what My Best Friend's Wedding is about, in my opinion. Here, the character has to learn to trust. So if you see movies where it's about trust, for example, Roman Holiday, I mean, it's really about trust. It's probably more Groundhog Day meets Roman Holidays. But I think because Roman Holiday is such a perfect film, I didn't dare to make this comparison.
Okay. I was wondering, when you were writing the script, how was the process regarding the repetitive wedding scenes? How crazy did you get while you were writing the different drafts of the script?
Actually, it was quite a journey, because at the beginning, it has a kind of humor that I like to watch, but I'm not able to produce it. It's like getting like really, really over the top and vomiting all over, like the beginning of Pitch Perfect,
when
she's like vomiting like a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do this. So I approached Steffi Ackermann and said, listen, this is really not what I can do. So we found a way to get around it, which is probably not as funny as it could be, but it's really very much me. It's like this massive amount of vomit, but it looks more like a picture. It's like this everything going down in slow motion, and she realizes that this is completely not appropriate. For me, being extreme is a bit difficult as a writer and as a director. So the movie is more, really, it's more romantic, and it's more about her realizing what she's doing, while really, really funny comedies, I think the protagonist doesn't have a clue what he or she is doing. So it was difficult for me to find a way where it's authentic in the way that I'm directing it. And I think Steffi Ackermann was really, really nice, because she supported me in it.
Mm-hmm.
I have the feeling sometimes when it comes to fight between the money, you know, and us directors, it's because we probably don't communicate enough. So I'm communicating a lot. And in this case, it really helped me, because, I mean, you have to communicate in order to get heard, and then to make a movie that feels like your movie, because I think that's really important for me, that I don't want to stop.
Yeah. And I also have to say, it is particularly refreshing to see that the female protagonist is the flawed one and needs to learn, or maybe rather unlearn, something to find happiness. And, you know, because for the longest time, the genre used the perfect heroine needs to fix the flawed male protagonist so they can find happiness. And how did you come up with Zazie and her issues regarding love and friendship?
Mostly the male character is my alter ego.
Okay.
So I'm not the director where the female character is her. But it changed a lot when Elisa came on board, because Elisa has three brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Elisa is perfect. I mean, Elisa, I would like to make more films with her, because she is really perfect playing characters who were played 10 years or 15 years ago. This would have been, like you said, a man.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
This journey would have been a completely male journey. And Alisa can play these characters who have like all these issues. On the other hand, which I think is interesting, when I offered the part to Edin Hasanovic, and I said, well, it's a bit like what women play in rom-coms, he said, but it's boring. Yeah, but it's what women normally do. You know, they're there and they're pretty and they're available. And it's like, but this is boring. And I'm not playing it. And I think this was amazing. You know, this is, women didn't do that. You know, mm-hmm. they were offered like art next to the glorious male. Yeah. I'm not saying names, but they're like, oh, I'm next to him. And Edin was like, that's boring. And then because Edin is, yeah, he's a very physical actor. And then I said, listen, I always wanted to make a film about someone who's suffering from
narcolepsy, I think.
Yeah, narcolepsy. And he, oh, this is great. And also Zazie has the tendency to get really loud. So if she's getting too loud, he's always falling asleep. And then we started rehearsing and it was so lovely. I mean, they both love rehearsing and I die for the rehearsing process. And yeah, and so this couple really grew together with these really amazing two actors and they're both really talented. They're both really funny.
Okay. Well, I do have a question about Anton as well, because as you just mentioned, it's a very calm and centered character, albeit with a little issue himself. When did you realize you wanted to juxtapose Zazie's problem of saying yes with him having the problem of saying no? Or did that sort of happen during the rehearsals you just mentioned?
I mean, saying no is one of my biggest issues in life, really. And as I said, like the main character, it's always a bit like my old ego. So this was always there that he can't say no and she can't say yes. Mm-hmm. This was probably the yin and yang from the beginning.
And I also like that in the film, you dispense the notion that Philip is the one or that Francisca is purely horrible quite early on. And instead, you really focus on Zazie and her journey. Was the focus always as firmly on her as it is in the final version of the film?
Yes. Yes, because, I mean, she's the only one realizing that the day repeats.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, she's the only one having the mindset where she's in. I have to say that I love Alisa Knipberg and Edin Hasanovic, but I'm a huge fan from Emilia Schiele.
Mm-hmm.
I think we rehearsed and when she cancels the wedding, for me, this is one of the nicest scenes I have actually directed. And I think Emilia is outstanding. She's really outstanding. And she also breaks the thing that she is evil.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not evil. I mean, she seeks perfection, but a wedding day is something where perfection is
elusive, really.
Kind of the big quote. Yeah. Either, I mean, most brides really suffer from the fact that everyone assumes them to be perfect from the way you look, your dress. I mean, look at the royal weddings, you know, Harry and Meghan. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was all about
yeah. perfection.
And the moment when she cancels the wedding, all her longing to be not a perfect and superwoman really completely breaks through. And I was really happy about it. A lot of that happened in the rehearsal process because I don't like it when characters are too one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. I mean, rom-coms have a bit the tendency that you have to need sidekicks.
Yeah.
But I like it when they break, mm-hmm. you know, and something else reveals.
Okay. Well, and last but not least, as a script question, tell us more about the terrific character of the bathroom attendant, the Toilettenfrau. Making her the mentor / wise woman was really, really refreshing, I felt. How did you come up with her?
Well, thank you so, so much. I mean, I have a really great script coach. Her name is Capoda Fanziatos, and I'm working with her since 20 years. And she always was in the toilet, and there was a moment when she's sharing a cigarette. And she said, this is my favorite moment in the whole script. And I said, why? And she said, because it's where everything comes together on the female toilet, you know, on weddings. It's where the nervous breakdowns are. It's where you, I don't know.
Secret hookups.
And then, I mean, I love You Cannot Want What You Want from Schopenhauer. I mean, I wrote about it as a teenager in Not Religion and Ethic.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote my first essay about the sentence. So it was kind of normal that it made its way to the movie. Actually, what I didn't know is it's actually also in Dark, in the Netflix series.
Ah, okay.
You Cannot Want What You Don't Want is a part from Dark. I didn't know that. But it's probably because we as teenagers, we get all these philosophers, and this is one of the large sentences you can write essays about when you're in high school. But yeah, I love her, and I love the actor. I mean, she is brilliant. Now, I think the second half of the film is, I would like to do more films like this, and I love rom-coms, actually.
I'm very glad to hear that. I feel they're often overlooked and not quite as cherished, I think, as they should be.
And then also, you know, do you know this? I often have this when sometimes I go through the libraries, Netflix, Disney Plus, Amazon, and sometimes you're really looking for a rom-com. And then it's so refreshing to find one that I really like. Is it like a nice evening? I mean, I also like drama, you know. I could watch Revenant over and over and over again, like it's really a form shifter. But sometimes, I mean, a nice rom-com is just so heartwarming.
Absolutely. Now I have a few questions about the shoot. I assume you shot the wedding scenes on the boat out of sequence, but back to back. And in general, how many days did you actually shoot all of the different wedding days? How many days did it take?
Well, we had really not many days, and we didn't shoot it scene by scene. We shoot it in light direction.
Okay.
My assistant director said, listen, you get crazy. I said, no, we get actually crazy if we change the light every time. And so we shoot it in direction. And if Alicia didn't know which day it was, I was singing to her because like the third day starts with, you don't owe me. The second day it starts with my house. So Eden and Alicia and I were constantly like having these codes. There was this song here and there was this here. And also that the level of being drunk is different. No, third day she's completely wasted. First day it's still in a level. But we had to shoot it in directions because the budget was not as high as we were hoping for, also because I haven't shot a movie in 9 years. So, but this was challenging, and I realized you can do everything. I mean, if you rehearse and if the actors have fun doing it. So we shot in this direction, first day, second day, third day. And we had, I think, had the whole wedding scenes, I think we had 10 days.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not a lot.
No, it's not much. We had 30 days altogether, which is not a much.
Yeah, no, that's not a long shoot. And follow-up question, which you kind of already answered, but I was also wondering how hard was the continuity during the shooting and then obviously also later in editing, given that obviously there's a lot of similar people, props, location in the wedding scenes. How hard was the editing process for you?
Or it was super, super. It was super hard. Continuity was really hard. I think I have with Mandy Sokol is her name. If there was a prize for best continuity, I think she would have gotten it because she is so there. I mean, she's so aware of everything. It's amazing. But this was tough, especially because my first ID got sick the day before we started shooting. Okay. I always said the most important thing is my first ID, and then the day before shooting was like,
oh,
sick, can't be there for the next 6 weeks. So the second ID, Eva Loren, stepped in for the first 3 days, and then Corbinian Bandinger came from Munich. He's such a nice first ID, so I made the next movie with him. And then it was going on like this. It was like this first ID coming in for a couple of days, and the next first ID coming in. But well, we managed. But continuity was difficult.
Yeah. And you mentioned that obviously, you know, you rehearsed a lot, but I was still wondering, was there or were there particular scenes that you shot that you then ended up having to cut and that you were sorry you had to cut in the final version?
We had to cut 400,000 euros out of the film because we had not enough budget. Actually, my producer, Sophie Koko, she's like rehearsing students at Ludwigsburg Film Academy. How we like sliced here a little bit, there a little bit. So actually, there was not a single scene that I could leave out. It was all left behind before we started shooting. No, this is really one by one the screenplay.
Regarding the boat, I was wondering how hard was that? Because I would imagine that, you know, that's also maybe some technical or logistical problems could arise. Obviously, you did a location scout before.
My production designer, Thomas Fronter, he was like looking for normal wedding locations. And because it's summer and everything is green, I said, oh, Jesus, this looks so not like cinema. And then I was looking at where are good wedding locations, and then I find this wedding boat. And then I called my DOP, Mark Achenbach, and he said, a boat would be amazing. A boat is great. And the good thing is about in the boat, and maybe shot in Hamburg, the weather is changing all the time. Mm. A boat, you're really in the boat. You know, you don't have wind, which made it really, really good. And then we were so lucky. It was April, and we had not a single day of rain, which is amazing.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there were like another film team who wanted to go on the boat, and I really liked them a lot. But I said, if we move everything out and you come literally the next day, if one of us gets sick only for half a day, it's not possible. So this boat, I didn't know, it's really well known for shooting, the boat that we were shooting.
Oh, okay.
And the rest, the weapons and the whole shooting in Hamburg was great. Then we shot in Stuttgart in the same apartment in which the Alexanderplatz was shot.
Mm.
I didn't know. The neighbors had such a hard time during Berlin Alexanderplatz. We came and they were like furious from the start. No. Really, they were hating us. They were like, another film team! I never had such much hate. Really, in the middle of the shooting, they were like starting to do like woodwork. Like,
oh, God.
And because we've been on the boat, there's been this massive harbor. So when we're on the boat, I was saying, listen, when we go to Ludwigsburg, everything will be fine. And then we were in Ludwigsburg. And the neighbors, they were like doing everything to mess the shooting starting thing, the piano. And all kinds of things.
It sounds like you had a lot of fun during the shoot. Oh, man.
I mean, I had such a nice team and we really took it like with humor. But Ludwigsburg, the neighbors, I never had something. We really came, the film team arrived, and they hated us. They hated us from the very, very first moment. I was like, okay.
Challenge accepted, I guess. I was wondering about the cast. I mean, obviously, you know, you mentioned Alicia and Edin. How long was the casting process, and what were you looking for specific regarding the roles of Sazi and Anton?
Alicia walked in, and she was it. And the problem is, if the first actress coming in is the actress and you know she is it, it's really horrible for the other, all the others coming in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if doing this again or if it would not be more honest to just say, listen, that's her. So this was really fast. And then we had like all kind of really, really brilliant, funny Antons, wonderful Antons, actually. And then, I don't know, have you seen Edin Hasanovic? He was like the host from the German Movie Awards.
No, I didn't see that.
It was absolutely brilliant. He was dancing and everything was so funny. He had the perfect comedy timing. Then Willy Geike and Steffi Ackermann said, listen, he is the man. And I mean, he is so, so talented. Like I said, he's very physical on the very place. And Edin really was looking for a part where he's not aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
He said during hosting the film prize, he said, I was like a teenager beating people up. And now I am a grown up beating people up. So this is the way he described the parts he was offered. And being someone who's so introvert and really, really soft, for him, this was really appealing. And I also like the idea of Edin playing this best friend. So this was Edin. Then Emilia was my first choice from the beginning because Emilia has an excellent comedy timing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. She always had, and if she was English, she would be the next Julia Roberts. She has this amazing clap comedy timing.
Yeah.
And then I begged Samuel Schneider in to play the roommate because Samuel wanted to play the lead, of course, and he's also really funny, has a really good comedy timing, and I was really, please, please play Patrick, this will be so funny. And Tim Oliver Schulz, I also begged him to play, he also would have loved to play Anton, I know, and I'm so happy that they came and played smaller parts, which is not usual. Normally they're like, no, I wanted to play the lead, goodbye. But Tim, he's so gentle. I think he's really a gentle person, and the characters he plays are very gentle and also very down to earth. I think he's a really nice best friend of Sazi's.
Yeah. Given all of the backstories we see for their characters and ever more marriages ending in divorce, do you know if Alicia and Edin brought any of their own fears regarding love and friendship to the roles? Was that something that you discussed during rehearsals?
I don't think. I mean, Alicia, she was in a long, long, long relationship. I think when we were shooting, she had a 10-year relationship already. Mm-hmm. which is amazing because she was only 20. No, not 10. She was 24 and she had a relationship since she was 17.
Okay.
So this is not really an Annalisa
issue.
And
yeah.
Edin is not like the character he plays at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so amazing for me to see his transforming. I mean, Edin is really, really, really funny. And he's not like Anton at all, like doing this transformation. I think for him, it was like...
Regarding the music, of course, that's quite important for the atmosphere of a film. And while you did not go the full Groundhog Day route, as in Zazie waking up to the same song every day on the radio, we could argue that, you know, she wakes up to the sex noises from the next room every morning. You did use a couple of songs, at least one song in several versions, the Mr. Sandman song.
Well, the idea with Mr. Sandman came from Robert Sterna, my editor.
Mm-hmm.
He was then called Robert Hauser. He got married in between. and then we had this, we got really crazy about it. Like this, is a musician from, it's a good friend from Robert from Berlin who made this, which I think is hilarious. And then there's this really sad Mr. Sandman. This is a version that was that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mr. Sandman is a bit like Billie Eilish. It's my musicians called Superstrings. They're also a band. And she has this incredible voice. And Caroline, she also sang You Don't Owe Me. She sang It's Also Quiet. And she did one Sandman version with a bit like Billie Eilish. Mr. Sandman, na-na-na-na. I think this was one of the funniest things. It was one of the nicest times I had in my life, was like making all these Sandman versions and all these things. It was really lovely.
And on top of that, I wanted to ask, was there anything that you specifically wanted or didn't want music-wise for the film?
I mean, for Steffi, because it's a film, Steffi Ackermann from Warner, she said, we have to have this amount of money for songs.
Yeah.
And we were trying, really like trying, like to get in and get some money out. And just, no, this is what you need, because when you are at a wedding, you can't start bringing songs nobody knows. Because at weddings, and if have your wedding film, it's about songs people know. So there was quite a very nice music budget. And this was nice to have, actually.
Yeah.
It was really nice to have a bit of money spending on songs people know. You know, and then, I mean, we started the film in the middle of the pandemic. And because it was in the middle of the pandemic, our the film fest in Munich was cancelled. And then there was this huge cinema with cars. And when we had our premiere, there were so many cars, it had to start almost an hour later because it around the block. And this was also one of the nicest events I had in my life, because a friend of mine was showing me a photo and said, it's like when the new Star Wars film came out in the 70s, you know, and all these cars, and they were like, and it's so nice. And actually, an open air cinema in car, the sound is horrible. We were like, oh gosh, the sound is horrible. But then you hear like a familiar song, it's like, ah, okay, the sound is very crazy horrible, but this is a song I know. And this was so nice. I mean, making like the pre-production and the premiere in this open-air cinema and all these cars. And, you know, when they put the light on, instead of clapping, they have the lights. And this was such a beautiful evening. It was really, really nice. In the middle, really literally in the middle of the pandemic. Yeah. Summer 2020.
Now, a few general questions. You've been working a long time as a writer and director. And I was wondering, how have the jobs changed over that time, if they've changed at all? What's your experience?
Well, I mean, we're going through very challenging times. Yes, we have. It started Netflix coming into the market. Now it's Disney, Apple. So storytelling-wise, this is great because you can have all genres. Which for me, I said at the beginning, I'm a form shifter. I like more or less all genres. This is wonderful. So as a writer, I have the feeling there are so many opportunities.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's getting tougher. You know, if there is like between, okay, we want to shoot this and the green light and we start shooting, is sometimes on such short notice.
Mm-hmm.
But I see people really getting mad outside, and really mad in not very healthy way. I think you cannot making a series in 2 months when you have 20 pages, and then 2.5 months later, you're supposed to shoot 6 times 44, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I think this is, and I see really colleagues suffering and getting severely sick, really like a burnout and all these mm-hmm. things. So I sticked to the cinema in order to protect my soul, really, because I mean there are a lot of opportunities and turning a lot of things down, not because I don't want the money or telling the story, but because I don't think I can cope with this massive amount of pressure.
Yeah. And since you're both a writer and director and also an actress.
I stopped it. And there are better actresses out there. And like being like directing a movie and also acting, and I couldn't do this. I think I see it and I see it very nicely done. I mean, Caroline, she does an excellent job acting mm-hmm. and directing her movies. Really excellent. I think she's brilliant. I could have never done it. For me, also, I can't write and direct at the same time. I write mm-hmm. and I really have to stop the writing process and then I start directing.
Okay. And is it easier or harder for you to write a script that you will not direct? Is it easier to let go, maybe?
Absolutely. I love to write for others. I really like it. I like it a lot. I also like it when people say, I want this and not this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard for me because killing your darlings when you are the director is so much harder than when someone else does the job. Mm-hmm. I really like writing for other directors. What I don't like if on the other side, the director doesn't know what he or she wants.
Okay.
If you're like cooking the whole buffet and they say, I want a noodle salad. I think this is tiring and I don't like that. But if I have like a director who says I want like this for a start, this for main course, this for dessert, I'm really happy to cook, you know?
Okay. And for the last question, I was wondering, can you tell us what you're currently working on?
Yes, because I'm so happy about it.
Okay.
First, I'm adapting a novel called Die Helle Tage.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I was on it like in 2015 and I failed. Maybe I was too young. I mean, they're mothers and children are older and my kid was 2 years old and I failed. I just didn't like get it done. Mm-hmm. And then I try again. It feels a bit like repeating a class in high school a bit. So okay. Last summer I was like, what am I doing here? It feels like I failed. Now I'm feeling the failure. But I worked myself through it. I mean, I have excellent producer, Sophie Coco, mm-hmm. the producer from Hello Again and Jochen Laube from Hello Again. So we work again together after this film. And then it really came in autumn. I have the feeling I'm allowed to tell the story about a young man who walks over the mountains between Turkey and Iran mm-hmm. to find his mother. It's a true story. It's about Mehdi Maturi. And I met him and I'm completely fall in love with his story. I mean, it's a real story. It's a bit like Stoma Schönhaus.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be so honored if I could make this film. So.
Okay, well, fingers crossed.
Thank you.
All right. And that was it. Thank you so much for sitting down with us, Maggie.
Thank you for having me. This was really nice. Thanks.
It was a pleasure for us.
And good luck, German Films, with all the success from All Quiet on the Western Front.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, okay. Fingers crossed for them as well.
Absolutely. Everything we have.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.